Hey everyone, my name is Yarrow and you're listening to the Making and Mending Rituals podcast. Thank you so much for your patience. I am so excited to share this interview with you. In the intro, actually, when I started recording, there was so much fangirling. So I'm going to try to rein it in here, but I will say that I loved speaking to Christy of Mixed Colors so much. I really adored her book, as I mentioned in the episode, and I think she's such an incredible inspiration when it comes to textiles, but really any kind of making and ritual practice. I am so excited for you to meet her if you haven't already, and I hope that you will get as much out of this episode as I did. Just a quick announcement from me. On Sunday, May 26th, I'm running a workshop on ethical marketing. It's donation based and it's really for anyone who works creatively or has a business. So if that feels helpful for you, if you would like to some support around that, please come and join us. You can make a donation of any amount and I would love to meet you there and see what questions you have. And then I'm gonna let you enjoy the episode for now. Bye. Hello everyone. I am so excited for this interview. It's been a while in the making. I'm speaking to the wonderful Christy Johnson of Mixed Color. I've taken her class, I think it must have been about a bit over 2 years ago now, and I've had her book for a little bit longer, and I honestly can say it is one of my absolute favorite books in my whole kind of crafty space collection. I so often pull it out when friends come and they want to get into embroidery and they just can't imagine like a style or a vision or an approach that would kind of feel right to them. And I'm always like, you have just not seen Christy's work yet. This book is so beautiful. It's really gentle and offers a lot of technical information that's really accessible and friendly, but it's also so expansive in terms of dreams and symbolism and weaving intentions in and making the work into a real ritual. So it is so up my street. And I'm so happy and excited to talk to you today, Christy. Thank you so much for making time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's so great to see you.
Yeah, me too. Do you maybe want to begin by telling us where you are in the world and what nature is like around you? So I just want to say before you do, I'm looking into your beautiful space, which like illustrates your work so gorgeously. So I wish people could see that too, but tell us a little bit more about where you're at.
Yeah, so I'm in what's sort of like upstate New York, New York State. So about 2.5 hours northwest of New York City. In the U.S. And I am currently, we are at the stage where the lilacs are almost blooming, the crabapple and the forsythia flowers are on their way out, and sort of just littering the ground with all their petals, which is one of my favorite sights, is just to see a tree just fully cover the grass with petals. And there are, we have our red, yellow, blue, team outside. There's cardinals, there's blue jays, there's goldfinch, just all over the yard. And I love that red, yellow, blue color scheme. And just love seeing all the color just really get so much more vibrant at this time of year. That's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I really love that too. Would you maybe like to tell us a bit more about what your practice is like at the moment? I know you've become a parent, I think last year, right?
Yeah.
Is that correct, Math?
Oh. Yeah, February of last year. Yes. Yeah.
Oh dear. So yeah, I wonder like what is feeling alive and exciting for you at the moment? How do you find time and what feels important to you?
Yeah, I mean, I have always kind of worked just whenever I felt drawn or called to do something. And I always work a little bit popcorn-y where I'm working on this and that and dropping this and then picking that up. And now with my 15-month-old, it has been a really interesting experience to get to have to really reapproach how I work with my not only my business but also my creative work, and also allowing my creative work to have time. Since my business is creative, I can find myself spending a lot of time on the business and thinking that I'm doing creative work and being like, wait, no, I've just been like editing websites and like re-uploading PDFs and courses and correcting materials and like have not actually stitched anything. So it's been, for me, my practice has had to get really a lot more rigid with my time. And it's interesting that sort of honing in on, or like kind of, how would I say that? Bringing it in to start to expand. So creating a container basically that I can expand within, because I was containerless and I was trying to spend many months trying to just fit in work here and there and not really being totally present with my daughter. And so now just saying, okay, how can I make time that I'm actually working and make sure that I get what I need to get done in those hours, and then leave a little bit of time at the end to also, or maybe at the beginning sometimes, if I know that I'm going to keep working on my business thing for as long as I can, I'll say, okay, I'm going to make an hour at the beginning to do my creative practice. And so it's really just been getting really systematic about where I put my time and what I do with it and making sure that I don't get distracted.
Yeah, that makes sense. I relate to that so much. My work is also creative, but yeah, I definitely also have these days where it feels like there is a lot of creative flow, but then I haven't done anything really with my hands or anything just for myself. And I just really know that those hours nurture all the other work that I do so much, and they're really absolutely necessary. And that's kind of new in a way for me in the last few years, because I think so long I've been living in this story of like, well, you know, like authentic creative expression is a luxury and I should just be grateful to do any kind of creative work. But yeah, it's different kinds of creative work, definitely. Mm-hmm. You talk in your work so beautifully about the kind of central aspects of textiles and the slowness of them as well. And I wonder if you have any thoughts to share about like what that means for you at this time and how it maybe helps you navigate what the world is, but also what motherhood is and what it means to be a small business owner. And yeah, like how are textiles holding and supporting you?
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like, I mean, there's such a softness to textiles and such a tenderness to them. And also they are, I think I constantly kind of coming back to this, it's like they are ephemeral. They do not last for hundreds and hundreds of years. So within the greater span of time, these textiles can be this sort of fleeting moment. And so I think that that's something that I've really wanted to explore a little bit more, that concept, especially when thinking about like upcycling clothes and textile art and what long-term textile art means, how textile arts last long. Like for instance, I used to work with natural dyes a lot, and the dyes are somewhat fleeting. They're not permanent. Textiles are also not permanent. My time on this earth is not permanent. And so just this idea of this sort of shifting and moving and reinventing and repurposing, I think, tends to reflect out from my practice into how I approach my daily life. And also, like I said earlier, like trying to stay present with my daughter and just being like, okay, this moment is so fleeting. This moment where you say, ah, bo, and that's like the one word that we have, and you say it over and over again. It's the sweetest thing. And sometimes the repetition can get annoying. Just being like, there's going to be a day where I am just going to like want to capture that little, you know, that little voice in a bottle and just drink it. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can imagine. That is really beautiful. And I think the thing maybe that's bringing kind of a gendered aspect into the work with textiles, I really loved reading this book, Women's Work, the First 10,000 Years. Yes, yeah. Yes, you have it there. Oh, amazing.
I've got it right on my desk. Yeah.
Yes, and there was so much in there that didn't feel like gender essentialism to me, or like, you know, wasn't very prescriptive, but it was just interesting to think about how this work can coexist with other care responsibilities, because you can put it down and pick it up and you almost kind of weave your everyday life into it as you work on a piece over time, which is so cool. But yeah,
I wonder if
yeah, you seem to live in like a really beautiful environment. I would love to hear more if you want to share about where you find inspiration, and because your designs are so striking and I have this strong sense that you really have found your voice. Mm-hmm. I think that you have some art training. Is that right? Am I misremembering that from your podcast?
No, I do. I went to a magnet arts high school, which mm-hmm. in the US it's like a public school that you yes. apply to go to. Yeah.
Yes.
So it is public. It's not like a private school or anything, but you do have to apply to it. You have to be mm-hmm. accepted into the school. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I went to public arts, middle school and high school. And then mm-hmm. I studied art in college, but I never thought I was never quite feeling like I was an artist. I always felt more of like a designer. And that's why I ended up studying fashion design. And I think it was just because the way that I felt that I was shown that what art was supposed to be was you're supposed to come up with an idea and then you try your best to get to that idea. And then you have this finished work of art. And the way that I worked was so much different than that. It was kind of backwards where it was just like, I made art. And then an idea would come up and rise up from the surface. And so to me, that felt like, oh, I'm not an actual artist because I didn't have this great intention that I then actualized. And as I explored more about what the sort of professional art world, how that differed from just making art and the way that people made art for millennia before, which was just because we wanted to and because we were playing with the materials and we said, oh, wait, this, and when I do this with the materials and I get that, oh, and that would actually be the perfect way to describe the wing of a bird. And since that would be a great thing to put over here, and a lot less of this, you know, prescriptive, like I need to have this decisive way of being, which feels very kind of patriarchal, like we have to do it this way. And it feels more in tune with nature to just be a little bit more exploratory and more just letting the visions come up, letting the work arise out of the actual process instead of letting the visions dictate the process.
Oh yeah, that is so beautifully articulated. Thank you. I've not been to art school, and I've definitely had moments in my life where I felt jealous or like, should I have gone? Should I do that now? You know, am I even ever really an artist? And I think, there can be some truth to that. And then I also know people who found art school really hard in some way and who kind of took time afterwards to really found what they wanted to do. And I think you strike me as someone who kind of has the best of both worlds. Like in your book, you give us some really practical examples of like, this is how you put, a color palette together. This is how you might think about composition. And I had been touching on those things in my web design work, but I hadn't ever really thought about them in those practical terms and also not in a flat design that I could touch. And that was a different element to that. So that was really cool. And I was like, yeah, the best of the world. And then, you also have this like really distinct style. And I think I could pick out an embroidery that you made out of 100 and be like, this is, mm-hmm. you know, a design that you made, basically. Yeah. So I don't want to just keep banging on the book, but can you maybe tell us a little bit more about how you teach people this process of like having an idea, maybe liking some colors or having a symbol or an intention that feels important, but then what happens next?
Right. I think it can be it's important to stay really open-ended at it. And the way that I usually work is it's open in the beginning and it's kind of inviting lots of different, I like to pull out a lot of different colors and a lot of different materials and then edit it down. Or sometimes it's just, you know, a pile of threads that are on my desktop and I'm like, oh, that, I love the way that those colors look together. How can I, what fabric would those work on and allowing that to work out? But for me, it was really about taking the most important, most commonly used ideas about art and design that can be used by anybody, and it doesn't have to be very prescriptive. I learned, because I studied fashion, I learned a very prescriptive style of drawing, and I feel like I spent like the 15 years after college unlearning that before the book came out. So it was like, it was a lot of sort of unpacking how I draw a figure or how realistic something needs to look. And also looking at folk art for me was a really great inspiration for that as well. And realizing that we do intuitively have a sense of color and a sense of design that we can explore throughout our artistic practice. And I think that the actual act of creating is probably the best art school that you could go to, is just playing with the materials over and over again and seeing what happens.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think that commitment and consistency to practice is really difficult for many people to get to, right? Like I just, in myself and in many people I love and am close to, there is like a great sense of wanting to express insights that people have had in the last few years. We've all been through so much. And then how do we make time now to actually sit down and touch the material both spiritually and physically? Yeah, I love your classes. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about those?
Yeah, so I after writing Mystical Stitches, I was like, I have so much more to say about the design process, but you can only put so much in one book. Is what it comes down to. That's where the editor is there for, to be like, okay, you know, this kind of needs to end here. You've finished this book, let's move on, you know, and that let's let it be 180 pages and not 5,000 and take you 7 years. So for me, I started teaching online, like many people, in 2020. And I finished the book in, I think, May or June of 2020. And so then started everything that was bubbling up and everything that I had left over that didn't end up in the book, I wanted to put into a course. And so my course, Magic Threads, which is now, it used to be 3 weeks because we all had all this time at home, and I've since sort of lengthened it out and added more sketchbook exercises. So now it's a 10-week program. So it's a little bit easier to take in our daily lives. It's like 30 minutes a week of a video. So the idea that you can make time for the creative practice instead of feeling like you're behind or feeling like you don't have the time for it, or trying to allow it to be a little bit more easily. I don't want to say the word consumed. That's not the right. Allow it to be a little bit more easily interacted with, I guess, and allow to more easily integrate into someone's life. And so that's really with a focus on how we can work with color in our own lives, and also how color works with our magical intentions, and how we can think about different other elements of design, like, for example, composition. How does the way we compose, even if it's just a series of shapes, even if you're, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm not really that good at drawing. And it's like, we can all draw a circle, even if we try a little bit harder, or trace a spool of thread. You can create an arrangement of shapes, and that's what I try and encourage in the sketchbook practices, is to start to work with not just how can I draw literally what I see, but how can I work with the materials around me and start to discover my own style, and without necessarily having to specifically draw something. And I think that's the beauty of a lot of stitch work, and especially, like I was mentioning, the folk art. That's what I love about a lot of folk art too, is that it doesn't need to be a literal description. And that's what we love about it. That's what draws us to it, is that it is someone's just initial sketch into what a horse might be shaped like, or what the way that the features of a person's face might land. And it doesn't, the perfection is not actually interesting. And one of my favorite quotes from an art teacher in elementary school that I had, was that the camera has already been invented. We don't need to reproduce what we see in real life. And for me, that is, I just keep coming back to that. It took me a long time to kind of remember that after going through art school, where we're learning very specific perspective and anatomy and this and that. And just being like, I don't need to illustrate exactly what I see. We can do that easily, especially now with AI and everything. It's like, we can make anything. So why not have a little more fun with it and invent things that we don't necessarily, that we wouldn't necessarily see in real life. It's more interesting. And seeing the quality of the human hand in that experience, especially that we see with embroidery, where there's kind of like a slightly wonky out of place stitch, and it's just like, oh, I can tell someone made that. And it becomes more special than a perfectly stitched item or a perfectly drawn, I don't know, a horse is my example, but a perfectly drawn horse.
That is such good advice and encouragement. I think there's so many people out there, including me, who feel exactly what you described of like, oh, drawing is so hard and it doesn't look quite the way I'm seeing it. But actually, I think you're right. There's so much intimacy in the imperfection, and really being able to see that this was handmade, and there's a story to it, and there's choices that the person made that are infused with intention. And that's so beautiful, and like more beautiful than any any AI computer can never do it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of my students will say, like, I just wish I could draw what was in my head more. I'm like, me too. Mm. Like, yeah. Like, no one, like, what we're seeing, we are starting with an image in our head, and then there is bringing that into life, whatever comes in through our hands, and that's never going to be the exact same thing that you see in your head. And that's kind of the beauty of it. The things that are in our head are just the starting point. They're the stepping off point. When we get to moving into our hands and seeing what we're actually creating in real life, it becomes a totally different, it oftentimes becomes totally different than where we started, and that should be okay. And I think, you know, I actually saw a quote recently in a book that I found called Art and Fear, Observation on the Perils and Rewards of Art Making, that basically says, the function, I actually found the page right in time, the function of the overwhelming majority of your artwork is simply to teach you how to make the small fraction of your artwork that soars. And I don't even think that the artwork that soars is necessarily the thing that we need to focus on, but it is, like, the overwhelming majority of our work is made to teach us about making our work. And I think that's really important to remember too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that sounds like a great book. I should maybe put that on my list as well.
It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also funny, that kind of book cover design. I feel like that kind of, I have a few of those kinds of books as well, and they have a similar kind of style of cover design, interestingly, right? Don't they?
Yeah, it's the, like, the outline. This is The Courage to Create by Rollo May. Yeah, it's the, like, dark colored outline with the ivory in the middle, and the, yeah. Very specific aesthetic for that art, like, mini art book. They're about 100 pages.
So you touched on the internet a little bit, and I would love to tease that out a little bit more. I wonder what it was like. I mean, I assume that maybe in 2020, when your book was finished and then came out in 21, is that right?
2021, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder, what did it feel like to have more eyes on your work in that way and to start teaching online at this time that had so much intensity and complexity in and of itself? And then, you know, you have this really beautiful, grounded, embodied work, you know, life with your garden and your hands and the thread and, you know, and the plants and all that. And then you also have this online life where you're inspiring so many people with your work. And how does it feel to navigate the two, and, like, what kind of boundaries do you set, and how do you do it?
Right. I mean, in hindsight, it felt kind of ironic of using this medium that values rapid movement, go, go, new, like, this internet world, to share work that requires the slower pace, the work of making textiles. It's just inherently a slow paced. So I felt, looking back on it, feels very ironic to me, but it also makes a lot of sense to me because I grew up loving figuring out how to make web pages and things like that, and wanting to build, and, like, working with HTML and GeoCities and Angel Fire web pages, and, like, building, you know, like, staying up late on summer weekends or in the summertime in the evening, staying up late, like, trying to figure out how to, you know, make the cursor be like a sparkling star or something on my web page. So it always, that web design has been something that I've always been really interested in and passionate about, but I was never really that good at it necessarily. I think just because I'm more textiles focused, and so I never really spent enough time with it except for those middle school summers. But I had been planning this online course for actually years, for a few years before. I think it was like 2017 that I had conceptualized the class. And so Magic Threads had been 3 or 4 years in the making at that point. And it was really it was being able to be like, okay, actually people are investing into their own artistic practice during this time. And people are understanding how important it is to find different resources to really calm the mind and slow down and be present and be a little bit more focused on our work, because I think we had a lot of time inside, and we had a lot of stressors, and a lot of people, we had a lot going on, and we just needed a little bit more of a reminder to slow down, it felt like to me. So I felt really honored to be able to have that kind of ready to go in that period of time. Like, I had already created so much of it. Some of the videos had been recorded in like 2018. And I maybe did, you know, some re-editing or re-recording of some of them, but the materials had been brewing for many years. I always find it kind of ironic that I work with the internet to teach people how to stitch. It's like such a funny little back and forth there conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, it was so wonderful that your book landed at that time. I remember receiving it in the post and where I was kind of mentally at that time. I remember sitting kind of on my living room floor and spreading things out and looking at things and being like, oh my God, that was exactly what I needed in that moment, you know? Yeah.
Oh, I love hearing that. Yeah.
That was great timing, definitely. And part of me also, yeah, like you said, it was so difficult and stressful in different ways. But part of me also kind of sometimes really romanticizes and misses and feels a little bit nostalgic for the spaciousness and quietness of that time and how it was so much easier to focus in a way, even though I was on my phone a lot and I did doom scroll a lot more than I do now, but I was less distracted in some other ways, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, what are you working on at the moment and what are your dreams for the summer or the year ahead or your creative practice as a whole?
I have so much going on right now. I think it's just, I have a lot of like loose ends to tie up with things, but I'm finishing up the loose end that I'm really focusing on right now and is most important to me and most valuable to me is my new book that is coming out. And so as I mentioned how kind of one book needed to end and the next book needed to start, that's where I took off where I left with working with color and design and composition. And so the next book is called The Art of Embroidery Design. And it really is more of the actual developing an image and working with how does the line quality help with my intention? How does the texture help describe this image? How does the choice of color, how can I work with color to make it more vibrant or to push certain parts of the imagery forward and push certain parts of the imagery back? And also there's in the end, because I wanted to make sure that people felt a little more comfortable who maybe didn't feel like they knew how to draw. The end of the book has a few kind of what like scaffolding for designs. And so say like a bird soaring through the air. And so I've got the bird drawn for you, but how are you going to fill in the wings? How do you want to fill in the background? So it's sort of like a collaboration, it feels like, towards the end. And another really special part of this book is that I think there's about 8 different embroidery artists who have so graciously offered some words of advice on design from their own perspective and imagery from their own work. So because I didn't want it to be just my imagery kind of dictating the design, so that there's a little more inspiration from other artists in there. So that's what I'm working on. I'm stitching the cover of the book and finishing the cover of that now. And so that's my main focus. And then I'm hoping to get back into doing more live workshops over the summer. So I'm trying to I've already developed the curriculum, but trying to flesh out that curriculum a little bit more and trying to figure out how an online workshop interacts with more of a public facing society now that we are. So like, how can we incorporate live with pre-recorded with a community and mixing those all together in some sort of workshops. So I'm just sort of, that's in the beautiful, like up in the air stage of like, I don't know how it's going to happen yet.
That sounds incredible. When is your book going to be out? Do you know?
Oh yeah. It's going to be out in early 2025.
Oh, okay. That is not too far away. That is amazing.
Yeah. Great. They told me winter 2025. My publisher told me winter 2025 and I was thinking December 2025 and I was like, no, I can't wait that long. But luckily it'll be hopefully January, maybe February 2025. Yeah.
What a great time also to kind of very slowly emerge out of winter and then have that on your doorstep. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm really excited also to see who else you're featuring and what their work is like, because yeah, just being exposed to as many people as possible is something I really love. And I find it a bit overwhelming on Instagram sometimes. So I'm not on Instagram anymore, but when I was and I tried to find inspiration there, I sometimes was like, It's just so much to dig in.
And I think too, there's so much of a push now for a video on Instagram. And it's just, it's like watching, it's like when you go to those web pages and there's 17 different videos playing at the same time. And I'm like, my brain is not evolved to take in this much moving information at one time. Like my brain is barely evolved to have a phone in my hand. Actually, not at all. But so to see still imagery on Instagram is like kind of, you have to really like try really hard to figure out how to get it to show you just still images. I want things to stop moving for just a second.
Yes, absolutely. I think you're so right. And I'm worried about what it does to our brains and how overwhelming it is. I've had my phone on black and white mode for like half a year or something now. Oh, and that really helps a lot because it's much less exciting for my brain to pick it up. There are no social media apps anyway, but I can still browse. But that's not really fun in black and white, honestly. So I do it much less. And that's a good thing, I think, for me. Yeah, someone mentioned on a podcast, and I might totally be like butchering this, so I'm sorry about that. But it's more like, you know, anyway, it's not about the fact, it's about the idea that we see or we are exposed to as much information as someone in Shakespeare's time would have been exposed to in their lifetime. And I don't know if that's science, right? Factually. Really? But it is a really interesting thought experiment. And I think it is important to consider what that's doing to our creativity and our practice and stuff. One more thread I wanted to pick up. I just love how practical your books are. And I love how they make creativity really accessible. And I'll give everyone a practical example. Like before I did your book, I think it was in the summer of 2020, probably, I had this really silly and ambitious idea of embroidering velvet, which is just so hard to do, you know, because the thread sinks into the fiber and it's so different to think about, like the different line quality, like you said. And even like a really thick, let's say, backstitch or something can so easily get lost and it's really hard on your fingers as well. But I mean, I did know that. And I didn't know that, or I didn't want to know that. I just love velvet so much. And so I feel like having that little bit of guidance from you and other teachers I've encountered has really spared me a lot of wasted energy of like starting those kinds of projects and then figuring out like, oh, actually, this is fun and playful, but there's something quite significantly practically challenging here. You know, and it would have been great to have a little bit more foresight there, but anyway, so thank you for doing that.
Yeah, as a fellow velvet lover, I have the same experience. I'm like, one, I gotta figure out how to make the silk velvet stitchable, although I do find, I have to say, cotton velveteen is a lot easier to stitch. It's just a lot sturdier. It's still a little bit challenging, but it has that weight to it. So just to throwing my 10 cents on the velvet in there.
That's great. That's really good to know. Yeah. What I've come to do often now is just to have like a velvet frame. So I will embroider like the actual design on like a square of linen, let's say. And then I embroider the piece of linen on top of like, or not embroider it, but like just stitch it on top of the velvet. So the velvet is like a frame.
I love that.
Where can people find more about you? Where can they see your work? Do you have a website? Should they join your newsletter? What is the best way forward?
Yeah, you can visit my website. My website's www.mixedcolor.net. That's my company name, my sort of overarching Mixed Color Textile Studio. And I also have a newsletter that I send out twice a month, and I usually put everything that I'm working on, any workshops that I have, and I also share as much as I can textile inspiration on the newsletter. So whatever folk artist is inspiring me, or whatever vintage book that I found that I want to share, and giving a little bit more than just what I'm doing. It's like, what else has gone out in the world? I just love thinking of my newsletter as a little magazine, a little tiny magazine, and sharing just what's inspiring me and what I am in love with. And I'm on Instagram at Christy J. And I do update there when I'm working on stuff. I try not to flood that just because I'm like, I'm only going to share when I'm inspired. I also have my Instagram at Stitchwish. I have two Instagrams just because they work for different. It's like my personal Instagram and then my business Instagram for when I need to share something promotional or use any of the business sort of things on that app, which is becoming less and less useful, to be honest. So yeah, the best places to find me would be my website, signing up for the newsletter, and I have my main courses are Magic Threads. I also have a smaller course that's more self-guided. It's called Stitch Divisions, and I just recently gave that a little polish off, so you can get started with that, because Magic Threads opens, I think, 3 times a year. So it'll open again in September. I also have another course on clothing design, and I approached it in the same way that I did with the way I teach embroidery, which is like, clothing design is a field that can be very complex, and you open up a sewing pattern and it just feels really intimidating. And even as someone who's been sewing my entire life, I open up a sewing pattern and I'm intimidated. So I can't imagine how it would be to approach it just being like, I want to make myself a shirt or a pair of pants. So I tried to simplify it as much as humanly possible, condense it into the most basic forms, and also weaving in an element of ecological intention with that, with looking at how am I cutting the garments out and how can I make sure to use every bit of the fabric. And that's something that definitely was inspired by the Women's Work book, because just taking a look at how people have created clothing or how people have created fabric and the amount of time and effort that goes into creating a piece of fabric before the invention of the loom, to cut a bunch of shapes out of that and then toss like 30% of the fabric was just such a wasteful idea. And like, our ancestors would just be like, you have to be kidding me. You did what? And so I think it's just a way of respecting and having an appreciation for the materials, for the people that grew the materials, for the people that, even the people that sat there at the machine, making sure that that fabric was woven correctly. And so that's a big part of the courses. That soft work course is creating clothes with the intention of respecting the materials, and also respecting your own body by not having to be like, oh, am I a size 8 or am I a size 10? It's like, you make the clothes based on your own measurements. So you don't have to, no sizing is even included. Like, they don't even talk about sizing in the course at all, because we can get so caught up on that. So just trying to make the clearest, most intentional path from I don't know what I'm doing to I can make myself a pair of pants. With the least amount of like self, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah, least amount of body image concerns. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I might take that class next, because I think making clothes for yourself is such a beautiful self-loving act. And you're right, it can be really complicated to even find the right pattern, and then you open it and then there's like a whole other set of questions. But actually just starting with really simple shapes, honoring the material, trying to produce as little waste as possible, also learning to mend those things. Then I think we develop so much intimacy when we have made something, and then you suddenly find out like, oh, this is so close to my heart, but actually I can mend any of my clothes and wear them much longer. I hand stitched a really simple top without a machine in lockdown, and that was totally like blew me away in terms of like, you know, making and how long something takes and how you get to know it. But yeah, thank you so much. I will link all to all of this in the show notes. Thank you so much for your time and your thoughts. It was really wonderful to talk to you, and I'm so excited for your book to come out next year.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much, Joe. It was really great talking to you.